Hey everyone, just want to encourage you to find us on your listening platform and give us a rating. Anywhere you listen to that has a rating system, go on over and give us a rating and maybe leave us a review. Let us know your thoughts. These ratings really do help. Thank you so much for listening. On to this week's episode. Guys, if you could have any of the mutant abilities that any one of the X-Men have, and let's do X-Men animated series, which mutant ability would you want to have? Rolando, which one do you want?
All right, so I'm probably going to go with Mystique's ability to shapeshift because, I mean, it just gives you so much liberty, right? You could, like, imagine me shapeshifting as the President of the United States, or even better, someone in, like, the Senate who actually can make a difference. The change I could bring about, right? Or, more importantly, transforming to, like, someone hot and, like, you know, just feeling what that's like.
I see. Okay. So you just want to manipulate and lie and, you know, curry things in your favor.
Yeah. Bring about positive change and also, what's it called? Experience, you know, sexiness.
I love how positively you look at that. Yes. No, I mean, for sure. It's very tempting indeed. But I don't know if that would be my pick. Eddie, what about you?
I think Storm. I think there's something very cool about elemental powers, controlling, and she's like Omega level too, so
yeah,
to be that powerful and yet that, I mean, the character itself, I would want to be Storm because she's like amazing, one of my favorite characters of the X-Men. But yeah, Storm's power I think would be very cool.
Actually, Storm would be a cool one. I kind of regret not picking that one.
Yeah, you should, because I kind of feel like I would pick Storm as well.
So really? Okay.
All the cool kids are picking Storm.
All the cool.
I think that, yes, absolutely, controlling the elements, being like in touch with nature, with the earth, and being able to like communicate to it, have it, you know, come to your beckoning call. But it also feels like it's the least burdensome out of all of them, because all the X-Men seem somewhat plagued by their abilities to an extent, whether it's their actual ability or it's the societal ideas and pressures of what they should be doing with it, or, you know, how freakish, you know, they fall on a scale of, say, 1 to 10. Something about Storm, it's almost like, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like it's this burden. She has this mother nature almost aspect to her, which just makes it also seem like, okay, that would actually not only be fun to have, but it could be a blessing. You could learn and grow so much from it. So be my pick.
X-Men. Storm would be a pretty good one to have in general, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't even ask me which one I wouldn't want to have, because there's so many of them that I would not want to have.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a lot of them that are completely useless. And some are pretty useful. I mean, I always saw Cyclops was kind of useless, to be quite honest. Like, oh, you shoot beams through your eyes. I guess that's kind of cool, but, like, I don't know. I don't want to have to wear sunglasses everywhere. It feels like too try hard, in my opinion, you know?
Ruby quartz shades he wears.
Yes. I was thinking more along the lines of Rogue. What a burden that could possibly be.
Yes, I understand that, but I actually, if not Mystique, I would probably go for Rogue, so long as we're living in a world with other X-Men, because there is something cool about being able to take, also having the possibility of having all the powers at your hand.
True.
Right. But I do love what they do, what they explore with Rogue as a character with that kind of power. So
then would you want to also, to this notion, would it be a blessing or would it be a curse to have the powers of, say, Jean Grey?
Oh, no. Jean Grey also was my least favorite X-Men always.
Favorite character or mutant ability?
No, least favorite.
Oh my gosh. We're getting way too deep into this already. Guys, this is the cold open for this week's episode, which is X-Men, the animated series. So no Hugh Jackman, maybe a brief mention of him here, because we're really focused on the Fox Kids show that ran from 1982 to 1987. Mm-hmm. And then the new Disney Plus revival of that series, referred to as X-Men 97. So yeah, let's get right into it. I am Nicole.
I'm Rolando.
And I'm Eddie Z.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality.
So you guys were the ones who brought this show to my attention, and you were like, we really got to do this. We got to. I had no idea this even existed.
I'm surprised. And
I watched a couple like of these episodes much when I was younger, when they first aired and stuff, but it wasn't something that I actually grew up on. So my relationship with it is quite different. But like, how did this come to be? How do you know? Like, you know, how come I didn't know about this?
Well, you're not a Disney Marvel girly, right?
I'm not, no.
Or a comic book fan.
Yeah, that's also true. So this was announced a few years ago, right? Like, I think during pandemic is when we were still quarantining, that they announced that they were working on reviving X-Men, and it'll going to be called X-Men 97, and they let us know right off the bat, like, yeah, we're continuing the X-Men series from the animated series. At the time, there was a lot of like whispers, like, ooh, what does this mean? Because it's going to be an official Marvel studio, like, you know, Marvel studio, like the banner of that make the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. So I just had assumed it's just like, oh, this is great. This is how they're going to tie in the X-Men, right? Make this canon and then figure out a way to like kind of loop them into like existence. So that way they're not having to redo all the X-Men films, right? But now that's no longer the case. Now it seems like it's to be its own kind of standalone series, maybe connected a little bit to the Marvel Cinematic Universe ever so slightly. I'll explain to you how. Nicole looks at me so confused when I said
all the different universes.
But it's possibly there. But yeah, it was announced that they were just going to revive this series. I was super excited because I do have fond memories of the original X-Men. So I mean, I'll just go right into it. My connection with the X-Men was that this was actually one of my dad's favorite shows when I was a little kid. Like, he enjoyed watching this with me. I actually did not enjoy it as much, right? I was more of a DC guy, right? So I liked my Batman, the animated series, not X-Men. And with X-Men, the other thing about it was, I think the colors when I was little were too colorful. The show was too bright. I just like the action sequences. There was always a lot of talking, right? I didn't appreciate the show up until you become like you grow up and you look back and you're just like, oh shit, this show was deep. Like, this show way deeper than like, as much as I love Batman the Animated Series, like in terms of the themes and topics that this show explores, they're just like, oh, this is way more of my alley, obviously, as like a queer Latino, you know?
Yeah. Was that similar for you, Eddie?
Well, yeah. So if anything, the X-Men have been part of my coming out experience.
Wow.
For myself, you know, was the beginning of finding that token or something in your life that starts the process of you recognizing that there's something different about you. There's something special. Then not many people are going to accept it. And at some point, you may have to have a secret identity about it, or not be able, or also finding your tribe. And the whole idea of found family definitely resonates with the X-Men comic books too. So I just remember, and also X-Men, I remember picking up my first Uncanny X-Men. And that was the beginning of when I started like loving to read. Because when you read the X-Men, the writing, it does not talk down to kids. They put all these different things in there. I remember having to look up what it was, the idea of genetic manipulation or genetic engineering or what a mutation was, you know, because I was reading them when I was like 9 years old, 9, 10 years old. So that was like the beginning for me of like, besides, you know, my love for reading, but also beginning to like understanding of like, oh, this is kind of like an allegory of my sexual awakening or recognizing, you know, that I'm gay. So,
wow.
So X-Men.
You guys have such nice background stories with the X-Men. Mine is not nice, or at least just has no special relationship.
What is it?
And I remember the movies coming out in the early 2000s and not seeing them. I think I saw the third one, The Last Stand.
Oh, that's a shame. That's the worst one of the original trilogy.
And then I was like, okay. And then I like watched the other ones on DVD and I like thought they were fine, but I kind of was going along with it. And I still to this day kind of don't think the X-Men movies are as good as they should be, because when I got older, and especially when I watched like X-Men Days of Future Past, that was the only one that I saw, like the James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender one. I really started to appreciate the content more than the actual film. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, the concept of mutants and everything, like this whole world is fascinating. And I have a bunch of friends, one of my closest friends who we're in a book club with is very knowledgeable about comic books. So she would always just like tell me about how it was in the novels. And I was just like, wow, that sounds great. But the way that it's done currently in media is just not really delivering in this aspect that you're telling me about how it exists on the page.
For sure, in film, I think it's difficult, right? Because like for film, you have to cater to the spectacle that is like the mutant war that's happening between Charles Xavier and Magneto, who are the two arch nemeses of this franchise, right? And because you end up resorting to the spectacle, you end up stripping a lot of the nuance that comes into the storylines. And specifically, I would say you strip out also a lot of the queerness that is associated with the X-Men. Not completely, right? Because X-Men 2 did give us some like pretty, you know, X-Men 2 gave us like almost like a coming out scene between Iceman, you know, telling his parents that he is a mutant, right? Very, very much written like a coming out of the closet kind of scene. Even the third one kind of had that allegory, right? Like if you could choose to not be gay with like a pill, would you do it? Right. At least even like even when I was younger, that's how I took it. You know, the whole storyline is just like, oh, we've created a cure for the mutant gene. And some of the characters are struggling with that idea. It's just like, oh, I could just take a pill and be normal. And that's something that I think many queer people have probably thought of at least once or twice in their life. Like if I could just shut off this thing that makes me so different, would I? And yeah, like, you know, like I said, we see some bits of it. I think the James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender series plays not completely into, but like you do end up seeing like a relationship, like almost like a romantic, non-romantic relationship between Xavier and Magneto, right? Which is, I think, what gay Twitter always reads into it, right? I think someone had the funniest tweet, which was just the entirety of X-Men is because two men broke up and couldn't resolve their feelings for each other.
Yeah, which is something that I know that like there's so much potential there for allegory and whatnot, but in the films it just never really resonated with me. Granted, I haven't seen the early X-Men films in many years. I just was like, it felt like a disappointment, and it was something that I was always hoping would get remade and stuff. But I knew there was an animated series. I'm sure it will. I knew there was an animated series, and I know that a lot of people are a huge fan of it. And when I was younger, I was really into like the Batman movies, and I saw the Batman animated series. So I would always see like X-Men around that like time slot when I was a kid watching it. Mm-hmm. So I knew of it, but I never really, if I did watch it, it was very passe for me. And recently I've realized that I enjoy these superhero adaptations way more as animated shows instead of films. I think that they just lend itself better to animated shows. So anytime I've seen like Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes or Justice League and this, I'm just like, wow, this is how I think I like best superhero content. Because the freedom of animation too, you can tell these stories that they exist in the novels and you don't have things like, you know, salaries of actors, budgets, time constraints, all this CGI. Stuff, I guess, in a way. CG, yeah. I mean, even simple things like, oh, you know, shooting day for night. None of these things exist when it comes to animation. And you're just like, it's freer in so many more ways to create this, bring this fantasy to life. So this was very new for me looking at the original. I don't know if for you guys, you were like going down memory lane, rewatching some of your favorite episodes or not, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, my connection to X-Men was kind of, I was a DC guy, right? But I'll tell you one of the things that I never forgot about the animated series.
What?
The theme song. That theme song was so good. That I actually, what's it called, in high school, I used that in one of the fashion shows that I directed in high school, right? Because I got to direct a scene, and my scene was superhero themed. And this is actually just on the heels of the Bryan Singer film. And so I had like a couple of girls who wanted to, like, you know, have outfits inspired by the X-Men movies. And so the X-Men movies didn't have anywhere near as iconic as a song as like the X-Men animated series. So that's the one I used. I ripped it and like we used it in the actual showcase and stuff, right? I mean, that is a theme song that I've never forgotten about. And I'm so glad it made a return for the revival, if not just slightly updated. But it's such a good song. And yeah,
it's a great song, and it's a great introduction, the mm-hmm. way that they introduce all the characters and these like totally. Scenes, like especially like I love the choice for Cyclops because he looks like he's in agony, but it also is like so epic, you know, mm-hmm. like he seems like this tortured hero.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about intro. I mean, my favorite thing actually in the intro is actually the ending of it when you see the Brotherhood of the Evil Mutants running towards the X-Men, but it caught in the middle. Are the humans. And that's my favorite part of this intro. It just encapsulate perfectly what this show is about.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's something that I just couldn't appreciate as a kid until you just start watching it as an adult. This show, for all intents and purposes, was mislabeled as like a kid's show. Like this, the themes that it's exploring, way more like young adult for sure. And yeah, it's a wonderful show and stuff. And I do like it. And I think we would be remiss to say, but like, I think one of the biggest aspects of the show here is the fact that like you have two opposing story point of views, right? You have Charles Xavier, who is very much modeled after like Martin Luther King, right? Believing that we can that humans can coexist with mutants. And then you have Magneto. He believes in if this is a war. They are trying to kill us. Why would we make peace with these humans, you know? And modeled after much more Malcolm X, right? Because these books came out in, what, the 60s, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, so they were, I do believe there was like some inspiration from the actual civil rights movements and stuff when they were writing these franchises. Wow. And so that's also, so you have these two opposing point of views, and this is ultimately what brings a lot of the drama that is in this series. And yeah, like again, just as a kid, never could have appreciated it. Just like the action sequences, Wolverine was cool with the claws. And now rewatching these, it's just like, this is a good show, you know?
Yeah. And I guess for audiences who might not know what the X-Men's about, or at least what the show's about, essentially it's Charles Xavier runs kind of like a school for mutants. And in this world, there are human beings, and then there are mutants who have genetic mutations where they have special abilities. They could have anything from telekinesis to controlling, you know, the weather or whatnot. Every single person is different. Sometimes events can trigger a mutation, and they could come out of nowhere, I believe. And sometimes they're just born with it.
Yeah. Sometimes puberty is usually around the time that like.
Yeah, usually happens through puberty.
Yes, there you go. And we are introduced to this by a character who is recognizing her abilities. And this is the character of Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
And it begins with her parents being like, you know, what are we going to do with her? I mean, she's kind of like, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, they almost want to turn her into these like enforcers called the Sentinels.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's how it begins.
So more is that they registered her. So that's the thing. So it's like the Mutant Registry Act has been passed. And so people who display mutant abilities are now required to register themselves to the government. And it seems that you can, if you're a kid, you can do it. You can do it for your kid. It's, you know, you can just register someone. So that's what they did. They register her. But the Mutant Liberation Act, all that information, that database is, of course, is going to be used for some evildoers. And now they've located the mutant Jubilee. They know where she lives. They know what she looks like. And now they're hunting her. So the Sentinels, here comes the Sentinels.
And she's at a mall, which is so late 80s, early 90s, too. And you talk about colorful and the way that they dress these characters and stuff. I mean, it's just like so aggressively early 90s, which is a beautiful thing to see.
Truly, okay. Truly. I mean, Jubilee's yellow, like, long jacket is so iconic. I do, like, it's so, I think it's so, I hated the design when I was younger, but now, as an adult, I appreciate it so much. It's like, this is such gorgeous, like, character design for, I mean, it's such a memorable, like, colorful outfit. It's, and it does feel iconic, so quintessential 90s also, you know? Like,
uh-huh. Yeah. So to save her from the Sentinels, in comes Storm, in comes Rogue, in comes Cyclops, in comes all these people who Jubilee is at first afraid of, but realizes that they're like her and they're on her side and they want to take her and bring her to kind of like a sanctuary for people like them who can grow into their abilities and who can accept themselves for who they are. And but of course, everywhere they go, these people are constantly coming up with conflicts, whether it's the Sentinels or whether it's other mutants, or whether it's, you know, I think it is that, like, what do they call it? Like the MRA or something, like the people who, the government people who are trying to, like, get the mutants in line. Yeah, essentially.
Eddie was right. The Mutant Registration Act and the Friends of MRA, Humanity is what they become, like, as an organization.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the basis of this show. And every episode, it's a little, it's more so episodic where they kind of, like, doesn't follow this huge long storyline. They usually have, like, you know, monster of the week and storyline of the week kind of situations. But they tackle a lot of the ones in the comic books, correct? They don't, like, make, they take a lot from the comic books.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you definitely see a lot of source. A lot of the sources come from the comic book, a lot of storylines that, you know, can get condensed for like one or two episodes, but they would span issues. I was telling Rolando, reading the X-Men is like a telenovela because you have to know what happened issue before, and there's always all this drama because it's just not always fighting the monster of the week. It's discovering that the woman who raised you, your mother, is really the head of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, you know. Let's find out that the guy you just rescued, who looks like a Blue Devil, is actually your adopted brother. And all this kind of scandal. Or the fact is, I'm in love with two women. They look exactly alike, and I don't know how to choose them. You know, you have all this drama. And I, even watching a recap of this, I didn't realize how many ex-girlfriends Charles Xavier had throughout his history. It was just like hysterical. Like, this guy was like always like
mad put.
It is always like an ex that shows up later on in his life as part of this whole thing that he's fighting. In walks like Sabrina, what are you doing here in this alien world when I knew you back in England? You know, it's just like so weird. But very dramatic moments of intense soap opera. And also some really good storylines about what it is to love yourself and just like to also to recognize purpose, like your life purpose. Like, if I have these powers, what am I going to do with them, you know? And also, like, sometimes I, you know, recognize that you can't do this shit on your own. You know, you need a team. You need others. To keep you in line, keep you from, you know, like Wolverine is a great example of this. Is like him being part of a team helps him not lose control.
Do you have a favorite character in the series, not outside of the series, like as shown in the series?
A favorite character?
Yeah.
No, I think it's Rogue. I think Rogue Rogue has, well, first of all, she has a lot of history, and a lot of that history gets shown in the animated series, like who her mom is, her issues with her real human family, you know, how she was rejected by her human family, finding variety of different families throughout, you know, her journey, and finding some, like, and also struggling with, like, you know, this is a person who's very much charming and flirtatious, but who can't touch anyone. So it's this very interesting, come on, sexual tension that's constantly there with her, with Magneto, you know, her and Magneto, her and Gambit, you know, and, you know, not being able to express that physically. And there's always this desire to do so. So I find that very interesting as a character.
That's so
She's
funny.
So different from how she was in the movies.
She was so wow, different. Initially, I did not like her in the movies because she was younger. She was like kind of unsure of herself.
She was taking over the Jubilee.
Yes, she was. But in retrospect, I actually came to appreciate Anna Paquin's performance and character, especially how they made her kind of like the MacGuffin for the first film. Like, that first film was actually pretty good in terms of like kind of like pulling the rug under you, because we really are led to believe that Magneto is coming after. It doesn't matter. We're not talking about the movies, because the movies will get remade very soon enough and we will talk about it then. But yeah, no, I actually agree with you. I actually did not like initially Rogue in the movies as compared to the TV show, because in the TV show, she was so, I mean, let's be real. She was also so drawn so hot. Like, she was just so, like, smoking hot.
Mm-hmm. Way more playful, yeah.
Not that Anna Paquin is not a beautiful woman, but, like, Anna Paquin is nowhere near as curvaceous as a Drew Rogue in the animated series, you know? Let's be real. No woman is.
No, so that's unrealistic. Like... But it always was, like, you know, the moves, you know, the big butt, you know, always
the
calling
big hair.
The big hair. Always calling herself the Southern Belle, you know?
Yes, yes. I love the voice actress too, like that raspy voice too. Really.
Oh, yeah. I'm also such a fan. I'm a sucker for a raspy voice on like a woman. So, yeah, I empathize. It's so funny that you picked Rogue as your favorite character, because mine was Gambit.
Oh.
Oh, I quite like Gambit as well, actually. Yeah.
I actually, there's something just fun about, I love his outfit, like the duster, and then like the vest underneath, and then like the cool hair. He just seems so cool. And like, you know, with the playing cards and stuff, and then like he had like that Southern accent too, which is always just something like incredibly sad.
Well,
like, you know,
Gambit's someone with the French accent, right?
Yeah, he has like a,
it's like a Cajun accent, right?
Cajun, he's more Cajun. Yeah, so I think so, New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. I like Beast as well, by the way.
Beast is good.
I think Beast is adorable, and he's like the smartest guy.
Yeah,
so.
Beast doesn't get like a lot of the most screen time, right? Because he's also like a pacifist. He's like, you know, he's like, he's smart, he's intellectual, but yeah, he gets his moments to shine.
I guess that's why I like him, because he's not the most dramatic, where there's just like so much drama, especially between
so much drama.
Cyclops, Wolverine, and Jean Grey.
Oh my God, poor Jean. I don't know if this is just the tragedy of a character that just life happens to her. You know?
Seriously.
It's like Phoenix Force. Dark Phoenix Force. It's like clone, other clone. You know, it's
like, give this girl a break.
I know, Jean.
Give this girl an aspirin. She always looks like she's like, has the most traumatic headache in the world.
But it's very interesting, because the character that we see in the beginning that identifies as Jean Grey, I really liked her. I really liked her. I really liked Jean pregnant too, because questions that moment that she had with Storm.
Oh, wait, don't jump ahead.
Are we there? Okay,
we're not there yet.
All right, wait.
Roll it back.
We will be there.
But I actually, this is so funny, because Jean was always my least favorite character in the series. I hated her costume. I always thought she was naked, like as a little kid, right? Because like it's like kind of flesh toned, and she's wearing like a bikini almost, it looks like, right? I never liked her costume.
What's wrong with?
Oh, as a kid, I thought it was just like cover up, hussy. And
is that when you knew you were gay?
I guess so. It's like I would never say that about the guys, but yeah, the woman
cover up, hussy.
But I don't know. I just never liked Jean. Like, she was always so. I felt like she was always like. Like, I made the joke about the headache, give her this woman an aspirin, but like, I feel like she was always, like, the weakest. Despite the fact that Eddie keeps trying to tell me, he's like, she was one of the strongest mutants of all. I'm like, then why is she always fainting?
Hey, man, listening to in all those conversations and stopping time and all that, gotta be exhausting.
I suppose, but...
I would say so. So, what are some of your favorite episodes of the original series?
Eddie, what would be... I don't necessarily have, like, a favorite episode. I do have a favorite set of episodes, right? The Phoenix Saga, which is a Jean Grey heavy storyline, right? Because it does give us that icon. I will never... So many things with the show that, like, as much as little as I paid attention to it, like, just forever embedded in my mind, Jean Grey screaming, I'm Phoenix! Is always just something that comes to mind for some reason.
Okay.
With her in that fiery bird.
Yeah, and her hair.
God, we are so good.
She's giving me long hair, don't care. I love it.
And she's a redhead, which I have a personal preference for.
Yes.
So you had told me, you're like, oh, you know, watch the beginning of the show and then just like randomly look at the plots and tell me what you like or pick that and stuff. And I looked into it and it said that the show took a lot of like issue episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was them doing a commentary on the AIDS crisis. So I watched that, which was Time Fugitives. How'd you guys rewatch that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's about the
technovirus?
The technovirus, right? And this is a character, Bishop is there, who's mm-hmm. a time traveler from the future, mm-hmm. who comes back to prevent this virus from happening because it completely destroys his future. Second episode is a guy named Cable, who comes and he's like, no, this has to happen or else my future is going to be fucked up.
Yeah.
And all this stuff is going to like disrupt my timeline. So you have that going on with these two guys, and Cable comes back in 97. But then there's also like, okay, you know, everyone's like totally afraid to touch a mutant because if you like, according to this virus, the one that is genetically engineered, like the moment you get it, also you break out in hives, and it's like this thing that like completely destroys your body.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is like, I was like kind of shocked that this was something for children.
Yeah.
Because of the way that they really kind of manifested people's fears at the time about AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just kind of, I mean, I was blown away by the really complex storytelling too, because if you guys remember, they like almost redo the entire episode but from Cable's point of view in the second one,
right?
Which is just so clever. And yeah, I just, yeah, and then Wolverine saves the day with his antibodies.
Yeah,
sure. Okay,
is that his
I'll take your word for it.
Wolverine is invulnerable, so science saves the day. But
science, pretty
I will
much,
say this as
it's
a kid,
science.
I remember being slightly confused when I'm just like, wait, didn't we just see this episode again? So X-Men used to frustrate me as a child, right? But like, you look at it as an adult, you're like, oh, this is like kind of an entire episode just redone from a different point of view. Interesting, not something that I would appreciate as a kid. Was wasted on me, guys. It was just, this show was wasted on me as a child.
Oh my God. And I'm the opposite. I eat that stuff up. That was just like, I like tears. Like, this is beautiful. This is what I love. I love like, all right, we take the time travel with the possibility. That's how it came out. And then we just like reverse it or we change it back. You know, that the kind of back and forth. I love that stuff. Now for my stories today, sometimes I feel time travel can be used just to, you know, like a trick or, mm-hmm. you know, like a plot device, a lazy plot device. But for that, I thought that was really cool. Really cool.
And I absolutely agree. I think so too. So,
yeah.
And I mean, they have some pretty hardcore storylines. Like Apocalypse is one hell of a fucking villain.
Yeah, and it's such a shame how they just messed him up in the movies, but he truly is like such a villainous villain.
And he's for the long haul. The guy, I mean, he's lived for centuries, but he just like takes his time putting all these things into play. And at the end of the day, you find out that everybody works for him. Like, who do you work for? I work for It's like, you find out, I mean, like, this is why I love Rogue, because it's like, Rogue is like, she like her mom is Mystique, and like, mom, you're like the head of an evil organization. And not only are you the head of the evil organization, you work for Apocalypse. So mm-hmm. I'm just like, how do you even like have like Thanksgiving dinner?
Yeah.
What's that like?
I'll say this, X-Men, like this is like the mark of a good show or franchise, having very, very memorable villains. And X-Men did not ever fail on that. Like, we had Apocalypse. Mr. Sinister is, like, a terrifying villain. There was something always so scary about him when I was, like, little. I think it was, like, the teeth. Oh, no, Apocalypse had the teeth. Mr. Sinister, did he also have, like, crazy teeth?
Mr. Sinister has crazy teeth.
He does have crazy teeth. Yeah, Apocalypse has, like, something covering his mouth a little bit, right? Like, he has, like a headpiece or something. Anyway, he's terrifying me. Magneto, obviously, come on, he's such a great villain. And oh shoot, hang on, there was like another villain that just came to mind of like just big bads. It slipped my mind. Mystique, she was another big bad. She was always just like causing mayhem. Eddie, I don't know, do you have like any favorite villains that come to mind? Oh, the Sentinels, duh. I mean, come on, the Sentinels are so iconic.
Was it Senator Kelly?
Senator Kelly, yeah.
He's a great example, like using politics, using law, using like
which government to take away rights from people.
Yeah, which, yeah, as like we're watching the recap and stuff, because we couldn't watch the whole series for this for the podcast, but like so much of that harken back to like the Muslim ban that like Trump tried to enact and stuff. Do you know what I mean? And it's so interesting how, and this is why I think the X-Men is so, the X-Men is a show that it's always, you could, any marginalized group can always see themselves being represented in the X-Men, because history has told us time and time again that this shit is always going to happen. If you look at the Muslim ban, right? Mm-hmm. Very similarities here with like stuff, some of the stuff that like Kelly was proposing. The trans, like how Texas wanted to keep like records of like trans children, very much comes to mind with like Jubilee's first episode and like that mutant registration act, right? How Texas wanted to even like go as far as like, yo, Seattle hospitals need to tell us like all this people that are getting sex affirmation surgery. And like, see, you know, the Seattle hospital's like, absolutely not. Like, first of all, you have no jurisdiction over us, Texas, right? And like, this is the scary things that you're seeing here. Like, do not for one second ever not think that like if Republicans had like a House and Senate and a presidency, that they would not try to keep a registry of all homosexuals, and you know, who knows what they'll do with that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Like, and that's the thing, like we have seen this being repeated over and over and over again, right? There's like this, the X-Men, the mutants are a marginalized group, and even in like the queer community, you do have these like early in the queer rights movements, for example, there were two minds of thoughts. The first one was we had to blend in. We had to look as normal and straight acting as possible to show straight people that we are no different to them. We're just like them. Mm-hmm. And then you also have the radicals who were just like, no, fuck that. Like, we can be our own culture. We can be our own people. The Magneto point of view. And I tend to be, I guess, as I gotten older and more cynical, I'm definitely much more in Magneto's line of thought when, you know, when it comes down to it. It's just like, why should we have to conform to make the normies feel better? I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel about that. Anything I just said, rambled.
No, I mean, well, I was surprised that nobody said Magneto for favorite characters and stuff, because I actually think he's one of the most interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And what he stands for is the most complex, because it's like, fuck, he's right.
Yeah. And he's also, I mean, you know, he's a Holocaust survivor.
So he definitely has seen
what registrations can do.
Yeah, and atrocities of humanity. Mm-hmm. And when people are labeled as different, what happens to them too?
Yeah. I mean, Magneto is a really, it's hard to call him, like, it's hard to say that he's one of your favorite characters because he's a terrorist at the end of the day. So, you know what I mean? Like, his point of views are to the extreme that they start becoming evil. There is like a middle ground where it's just like, no, we should be able to be ourselves. We don't have to like conform. We don't have, like, we shouldn't have to conform. You know what I mean? He's such a good, like, as a realized character, right? His purpose in the show is just, all he wants to do is just create a sanctuary for mutants, and every opportunity humans, and there's only some, mind you, like some humans, but they will take that away from him always.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, it's just like, why can't we have nice things? Look at the black movement in general, right? Like, they won their freedom, and what's the first thing that happens? The Jim Law Crow, Jim Crow laws. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like you give an inch and they take a mile.
They just come up with a different, more mm-hmm. coded way to, yeah.
Yeah. So like, this is why I think the X-Men have been so popular, and it's because so many marginalized people can just relate. And you don't have to be, you can feel like just an outsider, and this, and the stories that come from the X-Men, you can appreciate, right? You don't have to, you can be a cis white person. You can be a cis white person and still appreciate the X-Men, because you may have experience to be an outsider in like your own school, you know what I mean? Growing up, it's not to say that you only have to be queer or a marginalized group to enjoy this show, but it does hit different when you have, when you have faced like some kind of discrimination in your life.
It's true.
Or, two,
Oh.
And another interesting thing is that some mutants can hide who they are. You know, sometimes their mutation is an outside thing, you know?
Yeah.
And they can.
Like Beast or.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like similar to what we had talked about in our own book club was like, you know, you speak like a white girl, you know, we, you know, what we train to, how we train to assimilate and fit in, and how some people from the get-go cannot, and how easily persecuted, and how easily they find themselves in situations of bullying or assault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what it is, like the X-Men too. It's just like, there's some people that are just blue, you know, they change one day when they hit 13 and now they're blue and they have fur. And you see that a lot with the group that lives under the New York sewers, the Morlocks.
Mm.
You know, these are a group of mutants that just, you know, they're just so different and they just can't hide or be among everyone because they can't, their mutation causes them so much suffering and so much persecution.
Oh, the poor Morlocks.
The Morlocks.
Yeah, really cute. So this all brings us, I do actually, at least there's one character whose name I can't remember.
The green one.
Leech.
Yes.
Yeah, Leech. Yeah. Oh, good job, Edge. I just know if that's the green one.
This brings us to this new show, 97. Why did they call it X-Men 97? I think I know why, but please tell me.
It's called X-Men 97 because it's picking up the year where the show let off. So it's picking
when
up.
When was this announced?
This was announced actually in 2019, but I think it was part of the 2020, like Disney. You know how Disney was like announcing like all their big plans, like their big, usually the big Marvel stages and stuff. And this was one of the big announcements that was announced. And I want to say it was like in 2020 when we got like the big announcement. And here we are 4 years later. With the first few episodes and stuff. And yeah, there was a lot of excitement with it. And then of course the first episode drops and what's the first complaints you hear about it? That it's gone woke. Make that make sense to me. That the X-Men is woke now. It's just like, when has it not been woke? Like this is woke before woke became a word. You know what I mean?
True. I just want to say also, if you're listening to this show, when we recorded it, 5 episodes had been released, but I think the day that we released the episode, the 6th would be released.
And it's not following up the most recent episode, I found out, is that we won't get like a conclusion to that episode till later.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Oh, indeed, yeah.
So the show is very much in like picking up where the other one left off. It's the same exact show. Mm-hmm. A lot of the actors have returned.
Mm-hmm.
They have not updated it. They just kind of made everything look a little, you know, nicer quality.
Yeah.
But like that intro is the same. They just maybe added a couple more impact booms and whatnot. And it really feels like no time has passed.
It does. It feels very nostalgic.
Yeah. Which is also like, in terms of like, this is a revival to like, this is the best definition of a revival in terms of our title, in the sense where it's like we are reviving it as if not a day passed by. Mm-hmm. And it's actually been about 26 years.
Okay, good math. It's been 26 years since 97. That's so sad.
I think it's probably actually been like 28.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, way to like keep twisting that knife.
And you remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
So we only have 5 episodes to talk about, but there are big ones.
Does that mean that you have seen the 5 episodes?
Yes, I have.
I am so impressed.
I can't say that I was paying attention the whole time, but...
And that's okay. Did you pay attention to the most recent one?
Yeah, I saw that ending.
Oh my God. All right, wait. You know what? Since that's the most recent episode, I just want to just go right into talking about it because Bo DeMeo, who is he was a showrunner. He got fired before the release of the show. We don't know why yet.
But
Bo DeMeo is a black gay man. He's the showrunner for the show. Interesting enough, we forgot to mention this, but the original X-Men also had a black showrunner for the X-Men. But this is a black gay man. And for the most recent episode, this is the episode that he actually apparently had brought to Disney as the pitch for the X-Men. So I'm going to read you what he had written, right? Mind you,
because
I think it just sums up so much of why this show, I've been loving it so far, and I didn't realize until after the fact. But a lot of questions, so I'll momentarily break silence to answer. Episode 5 was a centerpiece of my pitch to Marvel in November 2020. The idea being to have the X-Men mirror the journey that any of us who grew up in the original, who grew up on the original show have experienced since being a kid in the 90s. The world was a seemingly safer place for us, where a character like Storm would comment on how skin-based racism was quaint in One Man's Worth. For the most part, to our young minds, the world was a simple place of right and wrong, where questions about identity and social justice had relatively clear-cut answers. Then 9/11 happened, and the world turned itself turned against itself. Things weren't so safe anymore. Grassroots populist movements began to rise around the world as a whole nation struggled to deal with collective trauma and fracture at the seams of every diverse demographic. The effects we still feel today and have only been exacerbated by the collective traumas like COVID and several recessions. I'm going to fast forward because then he connects this to actually another one, like from his queer point of view, like another trauma. Let me see. Oh, okay. Yeah, here we go. All right. Yes, it looked like Gambit's story was going a specific direction. The crop top was chosen to make you love him. Him pulling off his shirt was intentional. There's a reason he told Rogue any fool would suffer her hand in a dance. Then, even if he ended up being the one suffering. But if events like 9/11, Tulsa, and Charlottesville, and the Pulse nightclub teach us anything, it's that too many stories are often cut far too short. I partied at Pulse. It was my club. I have so many great memories of its awesome white lounge. It was like Genosha, a safe space for me and everyone like me to dance and laugh and be free. I thought about this a lot when crafting this season and this episode and how the gay community in Orlando rose to heal from that event. Like many of us who grew on the OG cartoon, X-Men now have been hit hard by the realities of an adult and unsafe world. Life's happened to them. And they, like we did, will have to decide which parts of themselves they will cling to and which parts they'll let go of in order to do what they've been telling humanity to do, face an uncertain future they never saw coming.
Wow. Where did he release this statement?
On his Instagram and like Twitter and stuff.
Wow. Okay. Very intrigued as to why he got fired. A lot has happened within these last 5 episodes. And that last one, I think, being the one that really broke the internet, as because I saw a lot of people talking about it. Mm-hmm. I follow a lot of people who are watching this show. And I think that it just kind of, I think that that's really nice that you read that, because I think it did speak to something that like a lot of us weren't expecting to see and weren't expecting to kind of resonate with in that way, which is like, oh, wow, this hurts. In a way that feels a little too real.
Mm-hmm.
So should we talk a little bit about what's happening in X-Men 97 before we kind of like get to the big reveal of that?
Yeah, totally. Eddie, do you want to give a little summary? You usually don't. I usually do.
Girl, a lot of drama. So we start the scene already that Scott and Jean, they're married, right? Mm-hmm. And Jean is expecting a baby. Mm-hmm. And the whole question is, what are we going to do? Because Xavier's not here anymore. He's left.
Yeah.
He's left the building. He's not coming back.
He was assassinated. That's right.
No, he was taken by his alien girlfriend?
No.
Yeah.
I thought he was assassinated.
No. I mean, he's dead, but I thought he left Earth.
Yeah.
Hmm, interesting. I thought he was so I didn't get to that part of the recap, but I thought he was dead. Go on.
No, the world thinks he's dead, and they had a funeral for him, But his powers are damaged. He's in a coma, and his alien girlfriend comes and says, okay, I got to take him, but you probably won't see him again.
I see. Okay. Got it. All right.
So now it's like, Scott is like, I got to be the leader, but I'm also married. I'm expecting a kid. We may have, you know, we're thinking about leaving the X-Men and starting our own family, you know, kind of way. So this is all kind of happening. All of a sudden, once again, we kind of get a new mutant appear, similar to Jubilee, hunted by Sentinels and hunted by, what is it, like that group, the FOEs?
Yeah, the Friends of Humanity.
Friends of Humanities, right? FOHs. So, you know, then we meet the character, I think Manuel,
is his name. And he is later,
Roberto?
Roberto.
Was it Roberto? I thought, okay.
Yeah, I think there's Roberto. And he's going to be later known to be Sunspot. A mutant who hasn't accepted his mutant abilities, is in hiding, kind of in closet of who he is, hasn't told his parents, but found a kingship with Jubilee and kind of like, I don't know if he's living with the X-Men, but he's always hanging out in the mansion. He always like pops in, like, but he never's like on any missions or anything, but he's, but you kind of get this drama where you kind of find out that Jean is not really Jean, but a clone of Jean.
Yes. Like, what? Okay.
Can I take a moment and realize the Beast, we love him, but he has the worst delivery of news.
Yeah.
Like,
no bedside manner.
I know. Like, let's take a person aside and say, hey, Gene, I just want to let you know these results came out. But he just walks in and basically spills all the medical information.
In front of everyone. No regard to HIPAA. No.
It's like, and what is a girl to do but deny it? Like, what are you talking about?
But he's so adamant, too. It's just like, what are you talking about? He's just like, the science speaks for itself, Gene.
Yeah,
like, I don't know what to say.
It's so horrible. It's so late.
So, according to the show, the Gene that we've known this whole time was a clone of Gene?
Possibly. So we don't know.
We don't know. Right? So, we don't know. So, we don't know when it happened, right? So, we kind of learned that it's Sinister doing his thing. He wants to get the genetic material of Gene and of Scott because he believes their combination is going to make an ultimate child that's going to be the blueprint that he needs to create a superior mutant race. Right. Because he wants to do that. So that's his kind of plan here. But so this is like, so I remember reading the comic book when this all broke down, right? This whole thing with Scott, Madeline, and Jean Grey, this love triangle thing. It was very messy in the comic books. It took a lot of issues to get resolved. A lot of issues. But throughout the comic book, in the comic book compared to animated series, Scott, in the comic book, was a total asshole. Scott left his wife, left his baby, found out that Jean Grey is alive, runs to Jean Grey. You know, it's a whole messy thing.
Which is like, for what? What is a whole messy thing? Obsession with Jean Grey.
Yeah, it's just like his wife is pregnant and in Alaska, and he's like, I have no time. I got to run the X-Men. And Jean's back, so I got to start this relationship again. So that was all messy. But here is kind of like it happens like in a couple of episodes, but here is like, I'm confused. You're my wife? Are you my wife? When did this all happen? Did I marry you?
Yeah.
And you're having my baby? And it
turns out he had the baby with this other Jean Grey who gets the name Madeline Pryor.
And interesting thing, I mean, she does give birth. The hospital, the doctors did not want to deliver the baby.
Yeah.
They didn't want to do anything with delivering. Doctor was scared about delivering a mutant child and they ended up, Jean Rogue used her abilities. I told Rolando this is something that she can do. But she was able to take the memories of the doctor and all his years of studying to be a doctor for her to be able to deliver Jean's baby.
Yeah.
Or
which is what
Jean's clone's baby.
What a fun power to have. Like, I didn't know. I thought she just steals powers. I didn't know that she could also just like steal memories and, you know, steal knowledge in that way, right? Like that, again, what a great power to have for Rogue.
So this is all happening too. All of a sudden, also Magneto has come into the picture. He's come back wearing the most ridiculously sexy outfit I've ever seen in comic book history.
Homosexual outfit.
I was just like, what's with the gloves?
He yassified himself, let me tell you. The gloves?
And he's
Xavier,
like,
entrusted him the Institute.
All right. Yeah. Now, if there's any telenovela moment, is this one. He walks in. Everybody's like, what the fuck are you doing here? And he's like, I'm the new leader of the X-Men. And Scott's like, what? Not happening. And he's like, yeah. And he throws out the will and testament of Charles Xavier. Left me his X-Men, and now you're my X-Men. He left them everything. Twist. This is
leave it to a gay man to write that too as a cliffhanger for the first episode too, right?
It's like, twist. Now he's running. They don't trust him. But now we're finding out that Rogue had this history with him, and it looks like it was kind of like intimate. Now we have a love triangle.
between Rogue and Gambit. Yeah.
And then in the backdrop of all of this, Storm loses her powers.
That's right. Storm Storm loses her powers during the insurrection at the UN, right? I mean, that was like very much like what we were watching, like the January 6th.
Because she sacrifices herself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She puts herself in the line of fire when Magneto is going to be shot by this depowering death ray, right? And she just throws herself in there, and great scene, especially even what Magneto does too. I was not a great fan of Magneto in the animated series before, but way much more seeing this conflicting or this evolving of his vision, you know, merging or seeing the Charles Xavier's vision seep into his own ideas. But really, like, now recognizing that Storm sacrifice will not be, you know, be done in vain. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And her whole thing is that she's trying to work with this mutant named Forge, who, is trying to get her powers back and stuff. But as of episode 5, we don't know what's going to happen there. And then episode 5 being the one that broke the internet, the one that Bo DeMeo, I think you said.
Bo DeMeo, showrunner. He was like the head writer.
Yes. So that one is pretty much like, there's, you know, like, oh, do I love Jean Grey? Do I love Madeline Pryor? And then maybe Jean Grey, maybe Madeline Pryor is like, oh, well, do I love Cyclops? Do I love Wolverine? Mm-hmm. And then Magneto, Rogue, and Gambit head to Genosha. And they're like, yeah, cool. We're like, you know, admitted into the UN. This is awesome. Let's kind of like celebrate. And then all of a sudden Cable arrives,
yes. And then the review, I didn't know this. Eddie's one who told me.
I knew this.
Eddie knew
this.
He'd been holding out on me.
But it's just like Cable comes and Madeline Pryor is like out in the balcony and he appears to her and he's like, you have to warn them. You have to get them out of here. And then she sees his eyes and she's like, Nathan, is this my son that I gave up?
I was so...
Because he called the technovirus?
I was gooped.
So think about this. Her infant returns as a grown-ass man who's a time traveler who almost died from the technovirus. And he's in front of her and he's saying, like, you got to get him out. And then it's too late. And then he says, I'm sorry, Mom. And gone.
God. Yeah, that was such a... And you... So for me, I'm just like, oh, shit, what a big bombshell to drop towards the... Because you see the timeline. It's like, there's not that much time left. Like, so like this has to be, like, the big, like, ooh, moment. And like, no, we just see a whole shit ton of you just get eviscerated.
But let's rewind here, because this whole thing with Magneto, Rogue, and Gambit has come to, like...
The head.
Almost to the head. Like, Magneto said, I'll run Genosha, but I want Rogue by my side. And he offers her this deal. He's like, hey, I want to be with you. You want to be with me? We can do this. You can do some great things here in Genosha. And she has this, like, I know that people have said, like what was going through Rogue's head? You know, why did she have to act the way she did? But, you know, she does this great that she walks in. And in Genosha, you don't have to hide who you are. So what has unfolded for this woman? Is for not only to use her powers in public and also to use it so she could dance like with Magneto. They're dancing in the air, right? Free. And they're also kissing.
Yes.
With Rogue, because Magneto's able to counteract her abilities, her touch power.
Right. And triggers. So, again, for Rogue's character, it is kind of a beautiful thing, right? Because here she is dealing with this thing. It's like, I love a man for his heart. Or do I need that physical touch, right? That, like, every human craves. Like, we all just desire, like, a physical touch, right? And that's something that she just is unable to ever have. So here's a man who can give her that versus the man that she is in love with, right? So it's like, what is it? And that's that's what she's wrestling with, right? And then it all, both get taken away like at the end of the episode from her, right? It's such a heart-wrenching episode, and it's just like, damn, like what a way to end an episode, to a point where it's just like, I remember I'm just like, Jesus, like, this is really how we're gonna do this? Like, I wasn't aware. And then I looked up, like, what was Bo DeMeo thinking, and he had just released a statement, and I'm just like, oh, this all makes sense. Like, we are talking about, like, I mean, way to trick us. Like, way to, like, he's right. The first half of these five episodes of the series feel nostalgic. They feel fun. Mm. You're not really necessarily investing too much of your mind into it until everything goes awry. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, oh, shit, I guess we all had to deal with this collective trauma of, like, because I wasn't even thinking about it, right? Like, I mean, he mentioned the Pulse nightclub shooting. Like, he had a more personal touch than we did. But, like, as a gay man, like, that did change in terms of, like, how I behave going to nightclubs and stuff, because it just no longer felt safe. You know what I mean? Like, even my mom had to pull me aside and was just like, please, like, be careful, like, when you're going out to these, like, spaces and stuff. And, you know, in her own Spanish way, of course, with side eye and attitude. But yeah. She, you know, even it, you know, the news like that even got to her. So it's just like, I understand, like, there are just moments like this where it's just like, you have to reassess. It's like, where do I, like, stand on this thing? It's like, do I continue to put myself in harm's way at any given moment or not? Like, you know, yeah, it was messy. It was dark. It was brutal.
No, for sure. And I think also just kind of relating to the fact that, like, at any moment, you know, tragedy can strike and that no one is safe from that is just something that is unfortunately all too apparent in our existence. So mm-hmm. Seeing that reflected, you know, I teach fantasy. I teach a class about it. And that's, like, my big thing. I'm like, you know, fantasy is the perfect genre because it's kind of giving you this distorted, but it's giving you a mirror reflection. And it's telling you things about your own life that you'd rather see done with, you know, these fantastical characters. But at the end of the day, we all want something that we can relate to. Maybe just in, you know, more fantastical way. And I think that's why more than any other superhero story that I know, I find this to be the most intriguing. Mm-hmm. And I think definitely the most hard biting, because of the fact that I can easily make parallels to my own life or to real life events. And it just, like, the messages that you could take from it are pretty, pretty profound. And what I particularly like about X-Men, why I continue to watch it and whatnot, is I like, yes, you keep saying it's nostalgic, and I completely agree with you. But I also love the fact that it's, like, feels really contemporary, and it doesn't have any ties to any of the other superhero properties. Mm-hmm. And we've talked a lot about the fact that there is this sort of fatigue happening, particularly with the Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. And yet, this is Marvel, but it feels fresh. Mm-hmm. But it feels also familiar. And then it also is not involved with any of that other stuff. So it's almost like a breath of fresh air in a way, because it doesn't fall within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, at least as far as I know.
Yeah.
So it's like it's its own thing, and it's just like its own story.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
It exists no, for just sure. as itself, which is refreshing for these superhero properties. Because even DC is like this now, which is exhausting.
DC's like this sort of, right? Like, DC still has, like, look at Joker 2. Like, that's not going to be related to any of the DC franchises, as was the Batman, completely separate from the other, like, comic book characters and stuff, right? So DC is weird. DC is like,
DC's got to figure their stuff out, I hope soon. But, yeah.
Wait, what do you think of, did you see the new Joker trailer?
I did. Oh, it looks great. I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. I'm super, for that last shot, everyone's, like, talking about, like, beautiful. It's just like, it was a nice shot though.
Yeah. And I wonder, like, if they're gonna include, like, pop songs, and I wonder if they're gonna include her songs.
Ooh, that would be great to hear Lady Gaga version but sung by Harley Quinn. It's exciting. I'm excited for the movie.
Which anyway, is Lady Gaga, yes.
Back to the X-Men. Yeah, I was shocked at how much I was shocked that, like, when I first saw the first episode, like, I had a feeling I was gonna enjoy it. I just wasn't sure. They fired Bo DeMeo, and it was, like, a very public firing. And I knew I was following Bo DeMeo because he's, like, a really, really hot guy, right? And he gives us thirst traps on his Instagram. Oh, yeah.
I literally just searched him. I'm like, that was not what I was anticipating.
No, right? Not for a writer. Not for someone who could deliver, like, an episode, like, number five.
Not
right?
for Remember. A writer of X-Men.
yeah, so he's, like, a hottie for sure. And so, but I was following him. And, like, it's so funny. The day I emailed him on behalf of the podcast, being like, yeah, I'm taking a shot here in the event that maybe we can land him to give a quick interview, right? Of course, this is the day that like the firing happened, right? I'm just like, oh, what are the odds of that? I maybe had something to do with it, who knows? But yeah, he was just fired. We don't know why. We just know that he was just let go. And I'm not going to speculate as to why or anything, right? Because we have nothing. So yeah, but it's a shame. But so far, what he has delivered has been, I think, top notch. It's been entertaining. It's been fun. And then like you get these powerful episodes, like number 5, and even like Storm's episode, right? Where she herself is like reeling. Like, what did she say? She said something about like, you don't trust Washington with weapons like this, right? Which is just like so true. It's just like, you know, Washington is, I think this adds to that cynicism of like how bad sometimes government can be, but you know, sometimes it in the wrong hands, it can be, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So as X-Men fans, as graphic novel fans, as superhero fans, how do you feel about the show?
I'm really loving it, especially this particular episode, the 5th episode. I didn't think it was going to evoke so much emotion, but it did. It did in me. It, you know, made me think of a lot of different things. But just even to see consistency of the love that Gambit has for Rogue, that he would do everything possible to make sure that she doesn't get hurt, mm-hmm. even though his own heart is broken, you know, and the way he sacrificed himself. And even the moment when Magneto looks at Leech and realizes, I don't know if I could keep that promise that I promised you before, that one day you'll be safe.
Yeah, that was actually really sad. Oh, and then when he says in German, you don't have to be afraid anymore.
Yeah.
Like, talk about, like, another gut punch, right? Like, they're about to die. And this is his last words to this poor character. Oh, God. That was just such a dark episode. Oh, and then we got, like, a little flashback also from his Holocaust days.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. This show, I mean,
they're going deep.
They do. And I think the smartest thing the show did was, like, not say, like, they basically went, like, this is not going to be a kid's show anymore. Like, we're just going to go straight
but,
up.
But then well, at least for me, like I read these comics never held back. These comics mm-hmm. never mm-hmm. pacified anything. I knew about certain things because it was part of an X-Men story, you know?
Yeah.
I got words like that, you know, like slavery, discrimination, genocide. These words came from X-Men books for me. So it's always been a show about recognizing humanity, recognizing evolution, science, and also our own fears of things that are different.
Mm-hmm. No. Absolutely. I think the show is really impressive. It's one of my favorite properties we've covered this year. And for a show that I didn't even know existed 2 weeks ago, and I was like, what does that mean? X-Men 97. I've seen a lot of people on the internet talk about just how surprised they are by it. It's a real pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I would definitely recommend any listeners who's made it this far to give it a shot.
Totally. Agreed.
Yeah. Personally. Yeah. So.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Here we are. Another superhero property where Nicole's just like, I guess this is okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel, yeah. But guys, what do you think? You are beautiful listeners who we love to hear from. You should reach out to us and let us know your thoughts. Reach out to us by email at remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. Hit us up on Instagram at remakesrebootsrevivals. On Twitter at Remakes Podcast. Mm-hmm. If you want to listen to our episodes, you could search for us on YouTube or Facebook. Search for Remakes, Reboots, Revivals, and you can listen to whole episodes there. You can listen on our website on Podbean and our website, remakesrebootsrevivals.com. Yeah. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, go on over to it, whether it's Spotify or iTunes, whatever it might be, and give us a rating and a review if you can. We would appreciate that. We've gotten some recently, and we said we would read them this episode, but maybe we'll start next episode.
You want to start next week?
With reading them. We'll start, let's just wait one more week.
Two more weeks.
The anticipation is killing people. Yes, that's true. I'm sorry. Two more weeks. And that'll be for a really fun one next week that also has a lot of homoerotic elements. And I think we'll get a little conversation about Saltburn in there as well. So
okay.
I'm sure Orlando is going to be very happy about that.
Very confused as to what you're talking about, but okay.
But now you know.
Now I know.
So you guys put those context clues together and see if you can figure out what we're going to be covering next week. Mm-hmm. And until next time,
stay unoriginal.